What I'm going to be speaking to you about is our life group ministries. I'm curious, before we even start this, how many of you are currently active in a life group? You attend one. You would say, that's my life group. Can you raise your hands a little higher? Okay. I'm not going to ask that question in reverse yet, but I want to influence you to consider that if you haven't yet done that. Now, I was first introduced to the idea of a life group or a home group or a Bible study or small group as a young person in youth. Grew up in a relatively large church with a large youth group, and that life group, small group experience has carried me through my entire ministry, I'll just tell you. And I can honestly say this as well. Having been in the ministry as long as I have been now, 27 years full time, and with the advent of Facebook, I get Facebook friend requests from people. I look at them and I think, man, I have no idea who this is. And so I try to politely say something like, how do I know you again? You know, I don't want to act like I didn't know who they were. I mean, that can be rude. So sometimes I'll try to investigate, see where are they from. And this happens often now. I mean, you can imagine 27 years added to like a 16-year-old. They look a lot different. So I got one of those just this last week from a girl who I wasn't even sure who it was. And then thankfully one of her friends mom's Facebook messaged me and said, hey, so-and-so was asking about you, if you're still around or whatever. And here's what happens. This is almost what happens every time. They never say, that sermon you preached changed my life. They never say that. It's kind of sad, isn't it? Can you? They never say, oh, the lighting and the games were the best ever. They never say that. You know what they always say? That time when we went and did this, that time where we sat and talked and you answered my questions, that's what they talk about. That's what happens in a life group. So let's take a step back from that as an introduction, and let's talk about some of these great questions of life. Why are you here? Has that ever haunted you? Maybe a friend of yours, maybe there's a time in your life where you were frustrated with the way things were going, and you said, what is going on? I mean, is there any ultimate purpose to my life? Does it really matter that I was here, that I was born and breathed and lived and died? Does it make any difference? I don't know if you ever do this, and please don't think I'm weird as I tell you this, but there's times where I'll kind of drive through a cemetery. We've got a really nice old one in Liberty where I live, and I'll drive through there, and I'll just look at the names, and I just wonder, what did they accomplish in their life? What did they leave as a legacy? Is there anybody who comes and remembers them? Did it matter? Or is it true what the world tells us, that we're all an accident of science or nature, that just chemicals got together and boom, we're here, and there's no purpose? I don't know about you, but for me, there's a sense inside that there's more to life than that. And yet people, so many times, you know, they chase after things like just money. They chase after power. They chase after fame. And after all of that, you see it all the time on TV and in the news and famous people, and it leaves them missing something. Something just doesn't add up for them, and it just leaves this hole inside them. I would say to you, it's because we were created, built into our DNA, this something else, something higher. This last week, one of my favorite sports stars took his life, Junior Seau. I grew up in San Diego, Charger fan from the beginning. I mean, that guy was Pro Bowler, I don't know how many times, 14, 15, 16 times. You would think he had everything, restaurant in town, everybody's favorite. Why? Why would he end it like that? And the list goes on. You know, you hear about him all the time. You know, Whitney Houston medicating herself to death. And I mean, it could be any time. I wrote down some, maybe from different, for some of us who are bored at different times of life, maybe Amy Winehouse or sad to lose Belushi and Farley and River Phoenix, Kurt Cobain. Anybody remember Freddie Prinze Jr., The Man in Me? Remember that show? I can tell you that as a young person, that's the first time I ever contemplated the idea of suicide. Like, what does that mean? How could you do that? Why would anybody do that? And even as a kid, I'm thinking, he had it all. It's the most popular TV show and all this, and gone. Why? It's because those things don't satisfy. And so many times the world preaches that to us over and over and over, and we get sucked into it, and we strive and strive and strive to just get and to have, and we spend it on ourselves. And to what end? It's meaningless. It doesn't matter. The wisest person who ever lived, Solomon, says that in the book of Ecclesiastes. He had everything, wealth, women, riches, fame, everything you can imagine. Everything that the world tells us that we have if it's successful. And yet, he said it was all meaningless. That none of that mattered. The truth is that the God of the universe created you for relationship with him. That's why none of those things satisfy. None of those things will truly satisfy unless you have that relationship, that core relationship that gives you the meaning. And you may be sitting here, and maybe church isn't your thing. You came with somebody, and maybe you've heard this before, and it just doesn't make sense. But if you would, for a moment, just think about this story. Think about the fact that there is a God who wanted true relationship. So that's why he didn't create us as robots. He didn't create us as people with no free will that just had to do whatever he said. That's not real love. He didn't create us as somebody who would threaten us and cajole us into loving him. He created us with truly free opportunity to love because he wanted a meaningful relationship with us. And then human nature being as it is, we sin, we're selfish. We do things that push him further and further away and separate us from him. And sadly, the only way to return that relationship is somebody has to pay for that. The fair thing, the ethical, the right, the true thing would be for us to pay, wouldn't it? We're the ones who did it. But that's not how our God is. What he said is, I love them so much, I'll pay. That's why the Bible says the angels don't get it, because they're probably looking like, why would you do that for them? They're not even smart. And God said, because I love them. I want relationship with them. So he sent his son as a human being to live on this earth, to experience life as we did, and to die for us. He paid the price we should have paid. He paid the price that we could truly never pay. And then he sets it up. For some people, it's almost too simple. They think, God, no, I got to pay something. It can't be this easy. It can't be this free. And what he does is he says, just come to me. Take my payment for you, the sacrifice that Christ did. Take that. I will apply it to you, and then you will be truly free. Truly free. You no longer have to strive for all those meaningless things. You no longer have to work so hard to prove yourself because he accepts you and loves you and created you that way. No longer do you have to try to fit into the world's mold of what is successful and what we see is the ideal on a magazine. Instead, you get to find out that God created you in your uniqueness. I mean, look around. You don't have to look around because that could be awkward, but look how different he made each of us. And then you have people in here with totally different features, different shades, different sizes, different heights. None of that matters because you have a God who created you with those infinite differences, and he loves you that way. You know how freeing that is? You know how nice it is to know that I don't have to perform for everybody anymore because the one that loves me most accepts me just like that. If you've never experienced that before, if you've never allowed him into your heart before, if you've never allowed yourself to give yourself to him before, at the end of this service, we're going to give you a chance to do that. We're going to give you a chance to just simply admit the fact that you've messed up and you've separated yourself from God by the things you've done. Tell him you're sorry. This is not a magic formula. This is just a process we go through where we accept the fact that we are responsible for this. And then we ask him to apply that forgiveness to us, and then we accept him. That is it. Then you become part of this family. Here's the bottom line of this. What I'm trying to say to you, it's not about you. It's about him. It's all about him. That's where it begins, us and him. This relationship starts right there. And that's the beauty of it, because it starts there, but it doesn't end there. He didn't create us just for that. He actually created us for more than that. Because if it was just that, imagine what it would do. I mean, you could say, yes, I accept you, Lord, and boom, we're gone. Now, maybe some of you would like that, because that would get us out of the world, and it would be so easy, and you wouldn't have to deal with people anymore, and problems, and money, and finances, and how, I mean, all the basic human things. You wouldn't have to deal with that. But it's more than that. It's not just about us. It's more than that. It's about them. So for a moment, I want you to think beyond you and your relationship with God, and I want you to think about the people literally that are right around you. I want you to think about the people that are live in your neighborhood, the people who are related to you, some of the people who you know who are in need of that relationship, that very relationship that you have. We all have this basic need. We want to be known. And unfortunately, most of us are alone. Isn't it a sad fact of human life that we are so connected, like say the internet or so communications? You can talk to anybody around the world. When we were in Nevada, I used that Skype, you know, where you can have a video call with my kids almost every night. And it's amazing the connection that we are able to have. And yet it's sad how separate and alone people are. People are crying out for real relationship. Studies show that modern men, I'm talking about men, not females, but men, have so few friends today. Only 1 in 6 can say they actually have a friend, one friend. We're anonymous. We live in a world where nobody knows us, yet we're surrounded by people, literally alone in a crowd. I've been in places and seen somebody just sitting there crying, and people just walk by, don't even ask what's going on. You don't even know. I mean, they could have gotten hurt, or maybe they're just tremendously sad. Maybe they're mentally ill. We don't know. But the fact is, they're alone in a huge crowd, and nobody seems to care. Nobody cares. That's not how God intended it to be. Because God himself exists in community. Now, I'm not going to be super theological here today, but the concept of the Trinity is something you see woven throughout the entire Bible. In fact, it begins in the very first chapter of Genesis when God says, let us, it's a plural pronoun in the original Hebrew, let us create man in our own image. Why? Because he exists in a plurality, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Not only did he exist himself in community, but we were created for that community. Now, you remember how the creation story goes. You know, he created the lights, you know, heaven and earth, and the day ended, and what did he say? It was good. Remember that? And he goes on to create, and he has the land, and he separates it from the water, and then he says, it's good. It is good. Then he creates plants, and then he says, okay, you're getting it. Then he creates the animals, and he says, did you know the one thing he didn't say it was good? Man. Because he said it wasn't good for man to be alone. Do you see this? We need community with him, but that doesn't end there. It's also community with each other. We crave it. He created us that way. He created us for community, not only with a spouse, but with other people who maybe they're similar to us, maybe they're not. Maybe they challenge us. Maybe they encourage us. That's what he created us for. Let's look at even how the early church was set up and started and how it worked. Acts chapter 2, verse 42 says, they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to fellowship, to the breaking of bread and to prayer, and everyone was filled with awe at the many wonders and signs performed by the apostles. Then he says, every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favor of the people. And the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved. Did you catch the main parts there? Just in case, I wanted to highlight them on the screen for us. Number one, they got together around the apostles' teaching. Now, we do that on Sundays. That's an important aspect of Sundays with Sunday school, and then the preaching that comes from this pulpit every Sunday. And then on Wednesdays, we do the same thing. We have youth services, we have kids clubs, we have an adult Bible study right in here. That is essential. The other thing they added was breaking bread in homes. That's one of the huge things that's changed over years in our society. A lot of people don't eat together. Or if they do, it's in front of the TV where their focus is forward, not on each other. Very little conversation goes around in a home. I've read statistics on youth where it says, you know, upper 80% says that most kids don't have a conversation with their parent about something important to the kid. There's a lot of conversations that happen. Go do this, clean your room, you know, whatever. All those are important. But that's not the kind of conversation that brings life and community. The church had the same thing, but it was with each other in their homes. You know what I found? I found you don't really know somebody till you sat in their home and eaten at their table and looked around at the pictures on their wall. That's when you get to know people and you see who's important enough and you see the kid's art and the fridge or whatever. I mean, you see that. That's when you know people. It's different that way. We don't do that much anymore. Something else he mentioned is fellowship. In the Greek, this word is koinonia. Have you heard that word very much? It literally has the meaning of joining people together, joining souls. It's a knitting together that's different than just saying, hi, how are you? We lived in Minnesota for 5 years. When we were interviewing with the church, they said, we need to warn you about something. There's a term here. It's called Minnesota nice. Anybody ever heard that before? And we sat there and said, Minnesota nice? Well, that's nice. And they said, well, kind of. But it's what it means, it's people face to face, they're nice, but that may not be who they really are. I said, okay. And they said, well, for instance, someone might come up to you and say, hey, we'll need to get together. We'll have coffee. And that's the nice thing to say, but they don't actually mean it. I say, oh, okay, now there's implications to this. How do you develop relationships? Well, it takes a long time, they said. Real fellowship is different than that. They join together when prayer. They join together every day in the temple courts. See, they didn't have churches like this. But they would still meet in the Jewish temple and fellowship, get together. But then when they did church, they did it in their homes. In their homes. It was way different than what we do today. Let me illustrate it with these two symbols. We're all familiar with what it means, something 360 degrees. You know, you turn around, you see the fullness of something, correct? And then 3D, how many don't like 3D movies? I'm just curious. My wife's hand was first up. Okay, how many don't like it? Not because it's more expensive, but it just bothers you. Oh, okay. All right. I was just wondering because I think it's cool, but you know the idea, right? That things are sticking out, they're all over. What if the church was more like this? See, typically, a lot of times when we go to church, and this probably isn't any of you, but it's easy for people to walk into church and be just as alone and anonymous as the problems that I was mentioning in the world. Because somebody can come in and not be really noticed. They can come in, and if they don't stand out at all, or maybe don't catch anybody's eye, they can come in, sit, be part of the service and leave, and they went to church. But then you don't know them that way. I contend that we need more than that, that God intended for us to have more than that. Let me illustrate something, too, another way, with kind of that idea that 360, we need all of it. We need people who are more experienced in the faith and even in life than us. Maybe they're older, or maybe they're just more experienced. We need people like that over us to help guide us and pull us and direct us and challenge us. We need people on both sides who are walking the path with us. People who have experienced life and maybe you're sharing something. You say, hey, man, I'm going through this. Hey, I am too. Let's work through it together. People to come alongside. You know what else you need that a lot of people don't realize they need? Maybe they don't think they're equipped for or they're not a leader enough. You need people who are less experienced that you can guide and give some of the things that you've learned to. But it's more than that. It's multidimensional. I look at it like this. I want you to, I'm going to have you raise your hands again. How many of you are sitting in the same seat that, or at least within a seat of where you sat last week? Raise your hand real quick. Can you raise it higher and hold it up for a second? Okay. This is normal. You can put your hands down. I'm not criticizing that at all. We are ultimately creatures of habit. We do what's comfortable. We go to the same place typically. What if, as people came into our church, that you treated that area that you typically sit in kind of like your neighborhood? Think of it like this. When we moved into our house in Liberty, we weren't there more than a day even, and people started bringing us cookies and baked goods. And we were blown away. We were so excited. Wow, we live in a real neighborhood. This is a neighborhood. They noticed we moved in, and they welcomed us there. That was really cool. What if we treated our sections in the church like that? I had this good friend. I did his funeral a couple of years ago. A good friend at our church in L.A. And he would do trips with us. This guy had been this is remarkable. He was actually in the 101st Airborne in Korea, got shot down prisoner of war, and then he re-upped and was a SEAL in Vietnam. This is a very tough, imposing man. But he was later in age, in his 70s, and he always sat in our church where Frank is. This is where he would sit all the time. And one Sunday, I remember walking in, and I saw him standing like this, over these people who were sitting here. And he was just standing here like this, not saying anything, just standing there, staring at them. And the guy sitting there, they just keep looking up like, what's this guy doing? And I'm sure they're thinking, is he an usher? What's he going to do? And that's not what it was. What it was is he was trying to communicate, that's my seat, and you're in it, and you better move. And it was, you know, part of me was like, I just want to see how this goes down. And then part of me was feeling sorry for them, and part of me was like, Jim, come on, dude. When you were like 70-something, grow up. But what if we use that, because that's real, that's how we are. What if you used that to be more of a 360-degree, 3D church Christian person? What if when someone moved into your neighborhood, you brought them cookies? Here's what I mean by that. What if you welcomed them, not did like Jim did to Frank, but instead you welcomed them and you included them, because you notice when they're here, because somebody moved in your neighborhood, you notice. And you're checking them out, and you're thinking, huh, I wonder if they have kids. I wonder how old they are. You know, you do that. That's normal. That's okay. I'm not making fun of that. I'm saying use that to make those people feel included and part of what this church is about and what we need as a church. Real biblical community looks like this. We've talked about it. It's love God, love others. What do we do when we're here at church? We love God, we love others. To give it a little bit more definition and vision, this is how we're going to make it happen. What if it was like this, that we grow, we connect, and then we go? Growing, you can see the growing here. We're doing growing as a church, but we need more than that. People grow in their faith, and they come into faith in Christ, but then we need to help them make that connection, and then we need to go forward with that. It would look kind of like, you probably wonder what that tree was about. That's what it's about. We would grow. Biblical community has this grow, connect, go aspect to it, where we need to take an intentional look at our lives and how do we grow? How do we intentionally develop deeper intimacy with God? Now, for years as a church, what we did was preached, and that's important. But a lot of times in a sermon, there's not an opportunity to raise a hand and say, I missed that. What did you mean? Or how does that apply specifically to me? Let me tell you my situation and why I don't see that working. That would be weird, wouldn't it? In this setting. But in a life group, you can do that. You can do that because it's safe and people know who you are and they love you and they've accepted you. It goes deeper than that. Let me tell you how much we value this as a church. Our church literally tried to do small groups, life groups, pastor says, 5 different times, and it failed. And then basically they came down to and looked at it like this. We as modern Americans have limited time. We do. Our time is limited. Things have changed. You know, it's not like it used to be. It used to be my parents would say, come home when the streetlights go on. They had no idea where I was. None. It's not like that anymore. Things have changed. We have lessons for everything. We have teams. People are running all over the place. I mean, it's changed. Life is busy. So basically what happened is the church looked at it and said, if we are going to really have this life group thing work, we can't just add another thing to people's lives. We have to find a way to make it work. So what we did is we took our Sunday night service and made it the life group night, the traditional life group night. The whole idea behind that was to give you an opportunity to intentionally grow and to connect in a better and deeper way. But it's more than that. I see life groups also as a place for outreach. I want you to think of this for a second. When life groups are working the way they should, it's not just the church you should call when somebody's in the hospital. You would call somebody in your life group and they would get the information out. I think of the Wilkie's group because I'm on their email list, and Kelly Woods does that. And anything that's going on there, boom, there's an email, group me email to everybody. And there's times where I'll know something, a need in somebody's life, maybe a hospital issue, I'll know that before that church has been called through the life group. That's how it should work, because we care about each other. When you know about a need, you will know better how to meet that need through the life group setting than we would sometimes even as a church. When I first started in the ministry, I lived in San Diego. We would do trips to Mexico every month, it seemed like. And one of the most fun things to do would be to go to like a Costco or Price Club, Sam's Club or whatever, and get a ton of candy. And then when you go into these little towns, you start handing out candy and you have 200 kids show up. You know how good that made us feel? Like we were really doing something. And a pastor pulled me aside one day and he said, you realize you're just, he said this in Spanish and then somebody translated, but he said, you realize you're just perpetuating a very negative stereotype of Americans. I'm looking like, what are you talking about? We're doing missions. He said, do you know how much better this would be if you gave that candy to me as the pastor? And then I could use it as an incentive for kids to come to church and their families. And when you bring blankets and when you bring all these supplies, I know who really needs them. Because a lot of people, they're getting these things you bring, they just go and sell them. I realized I'm an idiot. But the same principle holds true in our church, where in a life group setting, when people know you and it's safe, you can ask those questions, your needs will be met. That's a beautiful way for this to happen. But it goes beyond that. I think about the outreach that can happen in and through a life group. I think about Jenny Crawford and what she's doing with the moms group that was here, that's here. And a neighbor of hers would come to that, but she's Mormon, but she would come to that because she was part of that community. I think about how sometimes people would never want to go into an official, like, church setting, as beautiful as our building is and as wet as it is outside. People would come to your home. I think about how important it is to have a place where people can be accepted and feel like it's safe and at home. I think about this. I think about leadership and what needs to grow. We as people in the church, sometimes we get to a certain level and we just get stuck and we don't change. But in a life group, there's an opportunity for you literally to grow leadership. To literally say, hey, this person's going to apprentice as a leader, and sometimes they're going to lead a Bible study. Maybe you never thought you could do that, but in the safety of a life group, you find out it's possible. I want to show you some of our life groups and what's available to you now. And while I do this, I want you, if you've never been involved in one, I want you to be thinking, hey, I know some of them. I could be part of that. Or you might be thinking this, maybe I should start my own. I was having a conversation with a guy at our men's workday. And he said, you know, we've tried a couple, and I don't know that we fit because we're kind of out of time. We're 40s, and we have a 5-year-old. And they said sometimes, and I know how awkward that can be. And I said, well, that's interesting because that's where I'm at. Mine's 7. I have a 7, a 10, and a 12, and 40s. And then I named off. It was easy for me to name off 5 other families who are in that same situation. He didn't know that. But ironically, none of them are in a consistent life group either. So we're talking about starting one for that. We have a new life group. Well, let me just show you the pictures real quick, just so you can kind of get an idea of what all is going on. That's Jeff Wilkie right there. And Craig Byers, you can't see him, but he's guarding him. But we do have a basketball life group that meets here every Monday night and plays basketball. Most of the people who go to that are not part of this church. That's an amazing outreach. And we'd love to see them here or in a church. But regardless, they're in a church playing basketball. I think it's amazing. We have, of course, the prime timers. Oh, we cut some heads off. Sorry about that. But Bev Taylor's been leading this ministry for many, many years. And probably some of you know that John Beckett's dad and mom are helping with this and leading songs and stuff. It's just a fun time. We know about Andrea's Wings Life Group for ladies on Thursday nights, first Thursday of every month. And there's many more ladies. We didn't get all the pictures. Some of them we have pictures, some of them we don't. For instance, Charlotte and PJ are running another life group on the other Thursday nights featuring Beth Moore study. And then this is one of our new exciting life groups because, you know, obviously this is a younger couple. How many know these guys? Okay. I see some of you know them. All right. Well, the Davenport's a newer, younger couple. They have a new baby. And for some of you, maybe you're sitting here and think, I have a baby and it's a hassle, you know, because you got to get them ready. And we all did that. We know how that was. Grief Share, phenomenal ministry. This is a ministry that meets once a month and helps people work through their grief. They're going to be out. We're going to have tables out here. If you're curious, want some more information, would like to meet some of these guys, this is the Smith Chandler Life Group. Well, some of them, not even them, they couldn't get everybody in that picture either. This is the Epperson's Life Group. This is the Wilkie's Life Group. Well, it's not just, I mean, there's more to that than that, but we have a prayer group that meets. This prayer group meets every other week. They meet right in here, and they intercede for our country, for our church, for Israel. That's their specific goal when they meet. Maybe you've been sitting here and have a passion for that, and you didn't know, hey, I wonder if anybody's praying around here. Yes, yes, they are. I got a couple shots here of youth life groups, and you may not have known this, but the youth life groups meet every week. Every week at 4:30 on a Sunday afternoon, they meet here. Now, they do a lot of activities. They do a lot of things, obviously, in the youth group, but this is specifically a life group meeting. This is some of the guys, and then this is just a bunch of youth that I got a picture of and showed them up there for you. Here's my question to you today. You may be sitting here thinking, oh, that sounds good, but I'm busy. I know you are. You may be sitting here and thinking, you know, it's tough for me because my spouse won't come. And I sympathize with you in that situation. Some of you may be sitting here and thinking, I don't make friends easy. You know what? That's what these groups help you do. You know, I was reading an article. They actually are saying that as a society, we've forgotten how to make friends. That you get to a certain age and you stop doing it. Like it, as a kid, you know, you're pushed to do it in elementary school and whatever. But then as you get older, you stop doing it. You stop learning the techniques to do this. A life group's a safe place for that to happen. You may be sitting here and thinking, I'm not sure which one I would choose. Well, guess what? All of our group leaders are going to be out at some tables out there. Some of them have some things to give you. There's some even some sign-up sheets for some upcoming events. I encourage you, I challenge you to take a moment and just talk to some of those people and say, hey, tell me some of the things you do. So who are some of the people in your group? Something like that. Maybe you're sitting here, and as I talked about starting a group, or maybe you felt like you might fit better in another group, maybe that's you, and God is tugging on your heart to do something and open your home. And if that is you, please talk to me, because I would love to talk to you about that and work through how to make that happen. We do periodic trainings for life group leaders. You would not be left alone. We would help you develop that. So here's what I'd like us to do. My question is, if not now, when are you going to do this? Some of you need the personal growth that this group would bring you. Here's what I'd like to do. I'd like you all to shut your eyes for a moment. My first question is, I'm not asking you to raise your hand. I'm just asking, between you and God, who would say that you need this? Maybe you haven't taken advantage of it, but you need it. Is that you? My last question is this. With your eyes still closed and your heads bowed, I know I started off talking about our personal relationship with God, a God who loved you enough to pay the price for you. And maybe during that time while I was doing that, there was maybe a little anxiousness in your heart, in your spirit. You felt like, oh, that's me. I need to do that. Maybe you've been praying to him and asking him, God, are you real? He's real. He wants to begin that journey with you today, a journey that would start today and last through all eternity. And if that's you, and you would like to do that today, I would like you to raise your hand, just kind of quietly. It'll be personal between you and God and me. Anybody? Seeing a couple hands? Okay. Here's what we're going to do. I want you all to stand with me. If you would all stand. And then what we're going to do is this. I'm going to lead you in a prayer, and I'd like you just to repeat after me. And as I said before, this is not a magic thing. It's simply us taking responsibility for the part we had in separating ourselves from God. So if you would bow your heads, and if you were one of those that raised your hand, I just want you to pray this and know that this is real. This is you talking to God. And if maybe you didn't even raise your hand and you know you need to do this, join in and say this with special meaning. Repeat after me. Father, I'm so thankful that you love me. And I'm sorry for the things that I've done that were wrong.